I asked Margaret. Margaret got it this morning. Anytime we have a atmospheric change like this, her arthritis is just miserable. And I didn't even know she was going to be able to get out of bed, much less come to church today. And so as we were driving out the driveway a little bit late, I said, I think I'm just going to talk about the blahs today. She said, oh, no. You know, you'll talk about something other than that. No, actually, that is what I'm talking about, the blahs. We find, and basically, I guess I should give some credit to start with. The original idea from this comes from a book by Charles Swindoll called Living Above the Level of Mediocrity. But monotony and mediocrity go together. And you can be very busy, and yet you can be very bored. And I see this in a lot of people who can, and I see it myself occasionally. I can be knee-deep in sick people and be bored out of my skull, because I'm not seeing anything different than I've seen the last 6 hours or the last 6 days, the last 6 weeks. And so life can become a tedious repetition. It can get dull, humdrum, and really not very exciting. And we have the blahs. Whatever that stands for, I don't know. And the blahs are one of the devil's most effective tools. C.S. Lewis, a man, one of the few books that I can't read fast. You can't read C.S. Lewis fast. He's one of those books you have to read slow. C.S. Lewis said, the safest road to hell is a gradual one. The gentle slope, soft underfoot, without sudden turnings, without milestones, without signposts. And again, his instructions to his underdevils in a book called The Screwtape Lectures or Letters. The long, dull, monotonous years of middle-aged prosperity or middle-aged adversity are excellent campaigning weather. And what that means is that's where you catch people as a devil, as a devil. We are blessed in this country because, like it or not, we have a lot of free time. We claim we don't, but we do. Now, somebody will get on me after this, but it never fails to amaze me how when someone retires, they say they're busier than they were when they worked. That's impossible. It's impossible. You put 8 hours of effort in somewhere and did a bunch of stuff before, but we all think that we're super, super busy, but we all have free time. So it seems like we should be happy, but sometimes in our trying to figure out how to spend that free time, we do end up with the blahs. That kind of tedious sameness or routine, doing the same thing over and over again, even if they pay you more for it, it doesn't count. Okay? Even if you attain some acclaim, it doesn't count, because it becomes tedious and monotonous. If you look at entertainers on stage that we have seen in our country, who have risen to great heights of acclaim. These are the same entertainers who look so happy and energetic and full of life on stage. A week later, we hear about them contemplating or committing suicide. What happened? That became boring. That became monotonous. That became meaningless. We hear about politicians the same way. If you go into the back doors, back corridors of hospitals and talk to doctors, you'll find the same thing. You'll find the heart doctor, the heart surgeon, who is bored to death, a heart surgery. He can do that heart surgery in his sleep. Okay? Now, you, someone who isn't used to that might look at that and say, well, that's fascinating. That's scary. That's it. No, it's not. After you scrubbed a bunch of them, it's heart surgery. That's what it is. You squirt a little on the ceiling, you squirt a little on the floor, you get things closed up, and you close up and go home. That's what it is. It's tedious. It's monotonous. It's boring. It's humdrum. It's monotonous. We see it in our athletes as well. They rise to these great levels, and we find them struggling to find some meaning. Monotony can siphon off the joy and the motivation for every task that we do, because it becomes boring and monotonous. And so our assignments, whether they be in school or whether they be in work or whether they be in life, our assignments become lacking meaning. They don't mean anything. Our work lacks purpose. It's just something we do. What are you doing tomorrow? Going up, going to work. What are you going to do? Same thing I did yesterday. Then I'm going to come home. Then what are you going to do? Same thing I did yesterday. Then what are you going to do? If you walk in most people's houses, mine included, you will find one chair that's shaped a little bit different than the rest of them. Maybe two, if two people live in that house. And if you were to measure, I don't necessarily recommend that you try this, you will find certain parts of their anatomy that fit those chairs. Okay? Because every night they do the same thing. Same chair. Same chair. Margaret has her chair. I have my chair. Heaven forbid one of the grandkids sat in one of our chairs. Get out of my chair. That's my chair. Okay? Throw a fit. My chair. And we all have these routines, which are important to us because they make us so we don't have to think as much, I guess. As many things as we can make habit as possible, the less I have to think. And supposedly I can think about the more important things. Sometimes we get around that, and sometimes we don't. But we have all these habits and routines that we fall into. And life becomes kind of boring. Kind of blah. It's kind of a sneaky attack by the devil. Kind of sneaks up on you. Go for a little trip through the Old Testament with me here for a minute. Think about Samson. Samson, great man, huge strength, unbelievable strength. Pick up a city gate to the boards around the gate, towed it off. Had to be pretty embarrassing when somebody ticks up the guard gate and walks off with it off in the middle of the desert. When did Samson get in trouble? When he's laying on his girlfriend's lap, that's when he got in trouble. Relaxed and laying on his girlfriend's lap. That's when he finally said, oh yeah, I'll tell you. How about Noah? Noah went through the whole flood, preached 120 years, built the ark just like God said, got all done. And when did he get in trouble? When did they have problems with Noah's family? Noah planted a vineyard. So I'll try this stuff. This looks good. Drank some of it, drank too much of it, got drunk, and his son walked in on him and was subsequently cursed through the whole family lifeline for seeing Noah naked. The family got in trouble when it was over. The hard part was over. They were relaxed. David should have been out there with the troops. He really should have been there. Should have been leading his troops. He's a warrior king. He got to be king because he was a warrior king. He got famous because Saul had slain his thousands and David had slain his 10,000. That's who he was. And here he is poking around on the housetop in the middle of the night. He got in trouble when it was all got kind of boring and monotonous and I can't sleep and I'm wandering around on top of the housetop. And as far as the New Testament, we're doing very well. They own property. In fact, they own quite a bit of property. They own enough property that they could divide it up. Okay? And so they said, well, we're doing well here. I'd like to continue doing well. So they sold their property and gave part of it to Peter and the apostles and told them that was all of it. They lied to the Holy Spirit. When things were going well, they didn't have to do that. Peter said you didn't have to do that. Things were going well. Peter, the man who was going to die for Jesus, okay? The man who was going to die for Jesus. The one who whips out his sword and cuts off somebody's ear in defense in the face of a huge mob. Gets in trouble over lunch. Over lunch. Because of where he sat to eat. Because he lost it. He got bored. Didn't have any meaning. Didn't have purpose. It was monotonous. We're going to talk about fighting the blahs a little bit this morning. Might be appropriate to snow, depending on whether you like snow or you don't. The blahs. Not very often do I use a text, but today I am. We're going to be in Psalms, the 90th chapter, the 90th Psalm. 90th Psalm. As far as I know, this is the only psalm that is specifically ascribed to Moses. This is the only one that specifically says, written by Moses, and that's significant. We think of Moses, before we start here, we think of a man of action. Moses was born in action. Remember, he got plucked out of the Nile River. And that's how his life got started. He was raised in Pharaoh's court. He was taught how to be assertive and confident and bold and powerful. He was taught those things. He was a man of action. And yet this man of action, if you think about it through his life, spent 40 years watching a bunch of sheep that weren't even his. Right? 40 years. Boring. You can get bored watching sheep for 2 minutes. Okay? The sheep get bored in 1 minute. Boring. 40 years. This man of action, God had him out plodding around the wilderness watching his father-in-law's sheep. 40 years. I cannot imagine. I would have gone crazy with something. If I couldn't think of something, I'd have made something up. 40 years watching sheep. Then he goes and he's called by God and he goes back to Egypt. He performs, God performs through him all these magnificent miracles that just bring the most powerful nation in its world to its knees. To its knees. And so Pharaoh releases the Jews. And what does Moses end up doing again? 40 years wandering around the wilderness leading sheep. Again. Happened to be God's people, but they acted like bad sheep. 40 years. Do you think this man ever got bored? Do you think there was opportunity for monotony or doing the same thing? Do you think he ever got tired of that? Sometimes our motivations go south. Monotony weaves a spell, and we become who cares? Who cares? The blahs. So as we begin reading here in Psalms 90, the one written by Moses, we see, Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting, thou art God. If you want to break the blahs, you start with God, crying out to God, and that's exactly what he did. And it's a relief to be able to call on him. Because this, as he says in that verse, is not our real place of residence. This boring, sometimes monotonous, sometimes worrisome, always place that we live is not where we're supposed to be living. God designed a much better one for us in the first place. We've messed that one up. Went and ate some fruit, messed that one up. And now we live in this place until we can get to a good one again, right? This isn't our place of residence. He says, Lord, you, not where, Lord, you are my dwelling place. Thou hast been and art our dwelling place for all generations. At the vanishing point, past and future, as far as you can imagine or see, God has been there and will be there. God is there. So go back as far as you can in your life, as far as you can remember, past as far as you can remember. Go back in history as far as you've been told, God was there. He was there before all that. And go forward as far as you can imagine. The world ends tomorrow, ends 5,000 years from now, 10,000 years from now. I really don't care. God's going to be there. God is always going to be there. There's nowhere in my existence that God is not. And Moses knew that. He knew that because who wrote the first books of the Bible? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Who wrote those? Moses. Moses was acutely aware of how God was involved in all this world that we live in. How he holds it together. How he made it. He wrote the creation story. So when Moses looked back at those 40 years of falling sheep, I think he found some significance in that and some purpose in that. And when he looked at those 40 years leading the children of Israel around, he found some purpose in that and some meaning in that day by day by day. God is there, even during those drab, meaningless, seemingly meaningless times. God is there. Yesterday to tomorrow, the beginning of school to the end of school, assignments that no one ever knows about to things a person has accomplished that attain international acclaim. From a child's earliest years to the last day of my life, God is there. God is there. You know, we all have days when everything goes wrong. You hope your doctor doesn't have any of those days, but you all have days that everything just doesn't flow right. There's no rhythm to this day that's any good. It seems like every turn you make is a wrong one. It's just not fitting together well today. And we have sayings like got up on the wrong side of the bed and all that stuff. It just didn't go in together. We all have days like that. And during those days, we become overwhelmingly aware of our imperfections and our inability to control things, that we're really not in control. And we like to think, I deserve better. We look at our circumstances, we look at what's going on, and say, why is this happening to me? What did I do to deserve this? Who's looking at me cross-eyed? You know, if the Greeks got up and had a bad day like that, they figured they defended one of the gods. What do we think? I deserve better. God says, no, I own you. I own you, and I have purpose in what you find purposeless. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. It's trying to find purpose in what we find purposeless. When I find the particular task at hand, blah, yuck, monotonous, tedious, boring, humdrum. When I find this work that, we need to figure out how we find purpose, God's purpose. He has one in everything. God's purpose, even if I don't see one myself. There are three things, three sets of thoughts that generally show up if I've got the blahs. Okay? Sometimes we use these other ways, but it's weird how we talk about life being short. Bruce and Kel stopped in and on their way home from the hospital the other day because I hadn't been able to get up and couldn't get in. And Lisa had to call me from Missouri to get me to unlock the door to have them come in. And we sat and talked for a while. We talked about how long this baby Blake is going to look like this. I said, you're going to blink once, they're going to be like this. You're going to blink twice, they're going to be in school. You're going to blink third time, they're going to be asking for the car keys. You're going to blink four, and you're going to wonder what happened. And that's what it feels like, right? Life is short. Life is very short. And because I'm aware of that, when I've got the blahs, it seems like I'm wasting a lot of time. Life, I know it's getting away from me. It's getting away from me, and I'm doing this purposeless, meaningless stuff. I'm not accomplishing anything. I'm just spinning my wheels. It's meaningless. And I start to think that rather than being in the who's who's, I'm in the why me's of the world. Why me? And Moses did too. Let's look. Psalms 93 through 5. Thou turnest man to destruction and sayest, return, ye children of men. For a thousand years in thy sight are but as yesterday, when it is past and as a watch in the night. Thou carriest them away as with a flood. They are as asleep. In the morning they are like grass which groweth up. How long is something there when a huge flood comes through? House is there. House is gone. Go to New England where the big storm came through. House is there. House is gone. That quick. Gone. Life is short. How short are a few hours in the night? Well, you go to sleep, and if you sleep normal, you wake up. Where did Latin during those 6 hours? What happened? I remember when I was going to sleep. I remember when I'm waking up. But I don't remember anything in between. What happened? It just went, gone. Just gone. I'll carry them away as with a flood. They are as asleep. In the morning they are like grass which groweth up. In the morning it flourisheth and groweth up. In the evening it's cut down and withereth. I know. Life seems short. That's why I'm feeling this way. I got things to do. I got things to accomplish. I need to know that I'm doing something that matters. I'm not just fixing the meals and changing the kids, and getting them off to school and going to work and doing my thing and coming home. Oh, man. Life should be more than this. Life's too short for this kind of stuff. I haven't got time to waste on this meaningless, humdrum nonsense. I don't have time. But God says, return ye, children of men, to me. God controls our marks on the world. He decides what mark you're going to make. We all have this vision that somehow we're going to make this mark on the world. Well, you will. But God's going to decide what it is, not you. Not you. You know, in the 1800s, in western United States, there were several towns. In fact, some of these towns still exist. Several towns that just kind of, boom! No town to town. Boom towns. You might have found gold. And where there was a stream with two guys digging in the mud yesterday, there were thousands, literally thousands of people there within a week. Thrown up so fast that they just put faces on the buildings. Back behind was a tent. You know your old buildings where they have those tall, flat fronts? And what's behind? Do you think they build them that way just because that was the way they built them? No, they made them look like towns that way, in ghost towns. They put this big wall up that was set on a couple poles. There was a tent behind it, but it made it look like a building. And you look at those towns, there was activity everywhere. Everywhere. You had stores that came from nowhere. You had the taverns that came from nowhere. You had the hotels that came from nowhere. And the restaurants, they were all over the place. They were there. And next day, the gold ran out, and there was nobody home. Nobody was there. Those towns are so interesting. I want to visit one someday. Just to read about it are so interesting because it's like one of those alien things where they came down and scooped them all up. It's all just right there. It looked like it was going to go on forever. But it didn't. It didn't. Take you not quite so far back to maybe the 60s, 70s. And we had a family in our history by the name of Kennedys. John F. Kennedy was the President of the United States with approval ratings that makes Barack or George or anybody else, until you get back a long ways where they didn't even do approval ratings, look sick. He had approval ratings in the 60s and almost 70. Now, you almost have to hand out steak every day to get that high. Huge. John was our president. We had the Camelot. The Camelot scene in the White House with his wife and the little kids, and everything seemed perfect. Sometime read Killing Kennedy, the new book out. You'll find out what was going on behind the scenes. Maybe you shouldn't. It kind of destroys the whole scene. And while John was president, we have Bobby, his little brother, little in stature and littler in age, who is the attorney general. Not particularly well qualified, but he was the attorney general. And his little brother, Ed, was a new senator from Massachusetts. And it really looked like, if you were watching, that we were going to have kind of maybe a little bit of a dynasty going here. You know, John probably would have been reelected, and Bobby would have been standing right in line. He would have moved up. He'd have been the president for a couple of years. But then Ed would have had enough, if he hadn't kept running off roads into ditches, he'd have had enough time in a Senate that he could have stepped right there. We had a little thing going. And how long did it take to destroy that? One pull the trigger, one in Dallas, another pull the trigger on the West Coast, and it was gone. Gone. Almost. We just elected one to the House. I don't know if you know that, but we did. But the power that was there, it was gone. And you would have stood back and looked and said, no way this is going to go anywhere. This is permanent. No, it isn't. The only thing that's permanent is God. Things that look solid and permanent, they're just frighteningly temporary. All of them. Think about us in our personal relationships. You know, you have this person, you have this person, you have this, and suddenly that person's not there for whatever reason. Can't imagine it. But they're not. It's temporary. Life is short. Life is short, but God is in control. Let's read the 7 through 9 here. Psalms 97 through 9. For we are consumed by thine anger, and by thy wrath are we troubled. Thou hast set our iniquities before thee, our secret sins in the light of thy countenance, for all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. When I've got the blahs, my sins and my shortcomings become very obvious. I've got the blahs, I'm stuck in this silly job because I didn't stay in school. I didn't try in school. I made a wrong choice. I refused to move to a different job. Whatever you want to do. I'm not smart enough, I'm not tall enough, I'm not whatever it takes. The reason I have the blahs and I'm in why me instead of who's who is because my shortcomings. That's what Moses said. He said, look, All my stuff, all my iniquities, my secret sins are all wide awake, full bore, right in your countenance. You see them all. And he talks, uses such words like, consumed by thine anger, troubled by thy wrath. All our days are passed away in thy wrath. What's he talking about? Is God some mean God that has a big club and just can't wait to hit us over the head? Is that what it is? No, this is a set of blahs for Moses. Moses has the blahs. The days of our years are 70 years and 10. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, it is their strength, labor, and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away. This man's depressed. He's got the blahs. Said, I might live 70 years. Maybe if I'm a little extra stronger, I'll live 80 years. Well, what difference does it make? I'm just going to use it working. Being disappointed. What difference? When it's all over, we're just gone. This man's got the blahs. God's wrath is not a mean-spirited God that plans to bat us down with a huge club. God's wrath is moral integrity. God basically has said, if you demand, if you do this, this will happen to you. And if you do this, this will happen to you. If you do good, this will happen to you. If you do bad, this will happen to you. That's moral integrity. That's not a mean-spirited God. He gave us every ounce of warning, every instruction that we needed, every opportunity to do it. And we're going to reap the consequences of our decisions. That's all. But when I got the blahs, my sins and my shortcomings become very, very obvious. And maybe, most importantly, who knoweth the power of thine anger? Even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom. Not busy. We're not talking busy. We're talking empty. Do you ever feel like your days are empty? Why am I here? Just why am I here? What did I accomplish today? They're empty. Verse 12. So teach us. Teach us. Cause us to know. Teach us to cause someone to know something they didn't know before. And we don't know this very well. Cause us to know. So teach us to number our days. That word number is not count. It's not count. It's to reckon or assign or appoint something. So what this really says, and listen carefully, so let us know how to assign significance to our days so that we may gain the ability to see life as you see it. Teach me to see significance in every day so that I can see life as you see it. So the salesman goes out and tries to sell, doesn't have a particular productive day. He finds significance in that. Somewhere he finds significance in that because he did it the way God wanted him to. He didn't lie. He didn't cheat. He was kind. All of those things. The teacher who stands up in front of a class. The class is particularly rowdy today. We really didn't get much accomplished. But she did it for God. And it was the kids learned how a person controls their temper. How they try to keep accomplishing things and bringing things back to task. And they did it for God. The worker who's sitting there, as Bruce does, putting this bolt Maybe it's more one bolt. I don't know. He may have more than one he puts on, but he's still just doing the same thing over and over and over for 8 or 10 hours. How do you find significance in that? That's what he's trying to do. He says, find a way, teach us a way to find significance in today, to find purpose in it, to find some meaning in it. So at the end of the day, I don't say, why me? But I say, it's all Him. It's all Him. The homemaker. She's at home. You know, where does all that dust come from? If somewhere in this creation, God made a dust machine. And it's working. It's working. Because, you know, you can dust. Sometimes come back hours later and dust again. You can see it. What good is that? What good is that? Or you all get together and you fix this really nice. This always strikes me on Thanksgiving. You all get together and we fix this great big meal. And you work all day cooking this great big meal. 15 minutes later, after we say the final amen, it looks like a bunch of pigs ran through. There's nothing pretty about that table anymore. It doesn't even look good. Most of it. Well, if mom was here, the cinnamon rolls are still okay. We're all right. It doesn't even look good. How do you find significance in your day when you do that? Why? How do you make it meaningless? How do you keep from saying to yourself, blah, this day is boring and meaningless, and I don't even know why I'm here. 100 years from now, my dad always said, 100 years from now, nobody knows the difference anyway. Well, that may be true, but not true, because God knows the difference. Every single day, God knows the difference. Cause us to learn how to make these days significant days. Days with meaning. That's what teach us to number our days means. Teach us to find meaning because of God in our days. Not because of what's going on, but because of God in our days. Meaning and purpose. Return, O Lord, how long? And let it repent thee concerning thy servants. Put up that club that we imagine you have. Lost my place. O, to satisfy us early with thy mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Worked my way out of the laws there, didn't I? Worked my way out. Rejoice and be glad. That's not the laws. It's amazing. It's amazing what night does. Because you can have a horrible, 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 horrible day. You go to sleep and you wake up to a new day. Brand new. Psalms 30 and 5 says, for his anger endureth but a moment. In his favor is life. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy cometh in the morning. There's a lady by the name of Ruth Calkins that wrote this poem. And it's one of those, I don't know if I can read it with the rhythm that she intended to be read, but we'll try. It's called In the Morning. Today, Lord, I have on an unshakable conviction, a positive, resolute assurance that what you have spoken is unalterably true. But today, Lord, my sick body feels stronger, and a stomping pain quietly subsides tomorrow and then tomorrow. If I must struggle again with aching exhaustion, with twisting pain, until I am breathless, until I'm utterly spent, until fear eclipses the last vestige of hope. Then, Lord, then grant me the enabling grace. Then grant me the enabling grace to believe without feeling, to know without seeing, to clasp your invisible hand, and wait with invincible trust for the morning. That's nice. That's nice. Moses works his way through all the things we think about, or most of the things we think about when we got the laws, and he ends up in verse 15 and 16 and 17. 15. Make us glad according to the days wherein thou hast afflicted us, and the years wherein we have seen evil. Lord, when you bring satisfaction in what seemed to me to be a monotonous, boring, humdrum life, that satisfaction is in proportion to the days that seem meaningless. That's what that verse meant. Give me days, give me as many days as I feel blah. Teach me to use the rest of my days significantly, with purpose, so that they're proportional. And then 16 and 70. Let thy work appear unto thy servants, and thy glory unto their children. And let the beauty of the Lord our God be upon us. Establish us, thou, the work of our hands upon us. Yea, the work of our hands, establish thou it. Now we have motivation again. Verse 16. I'm looking forward to the glory you're going to give our children. And we're established. We're confirmed. We're confirmed that God has meaning for us. That we weren't an accident. That we don't have a reason for living today. And then tomorrow. And then the day after. It's not boring, monotonous stuff. Your life, every day, has purpose. God wants you to find His purpose. He wants you to know He has purpose for every single day. No matter how boring or monotonous or humdrum it might seem to you and me, He has a reason for you being here today. And tomorrow, if we're here. And the day after, if we're here. He has a reason. He has a purpose. Cause me to learn to see it as significant, having meaning and purpose. Colossians, the third chapter, may mean a little something different. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever you do, do it heartily. Doesn't sound very blah. Whatsoever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance. Receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. We're working for God, is what he's saying. And all those times when your boss is there, or you're doing your work at home, or you're doing your work at school, and it seems boring, it seems meaningless, it seems a waste of time. If we do it to God, it has meaning. He has a purpose for it. He can make a purpose for it. He knows. It's His world. It's not ours. It's His. We're not here to entertain Him. And we're not here to entertain ourselves. We're here to worship and serve Him. That's our purpose. That's our purpose. And if each and every day I attack that day like I want to be entertained, like I want to have fun, like I want to be acknowledged by those around me that I did something that was pretty amazing, if I attack each day like that, I'm going to be disappointed. And my life soon will be blah. It'll seem like I'm wasting it. I'll say, why me? I'll be upset because it's going by so fast, I'm not accomplishing a thing. And all my sins have become very evident to me. I'll be upset with myself because I know why I haven't accomplished anything. Just look up. Look at the choices I made. Look at me. I can't do this stuff. I'm just whatever. That's it. We need to learn that God attaches significance to every single day, word, and action that we have. Nothing is insignificant. Nothing lacks meaning. And certainly none of our lives should lack purpose. God created you with a thought in mind. A thought in mind is one day when He assembles His saints in heaven, He has a spot reserved right there in the middle of the choir for you. got your name on it. That's what he made you for. That's what he created you for before your mother and father ever laid eyes on each other. That's what he made you for. Help us. Teach us to number our days. Help us to find significance in our days. Help us to find meaning and purpose through God, because if you find it other places, it goes away. It goes away and is disappointing. You can't have meaning and purpose in your life if you don't have God. It's just disturbing. It's just troubling. It just makes us sick. And so all of us with sin know that these things are really true that we wrote on the board. Life is short and very temporary. Very temporary. All the more reason to put significance in it and take advantage of Christ's sacrifice while we still have time. We're very aware of our shortcomings and our failings, because all of us have them far more than we ever confess to one another. Ever. Always bothers me when someone calls someone else a hypocrite. We're all hypocrites. We all are. That's why we need Jesus. If we weren't hypocrites, we were lily white, we wouldn't need Jesus, would we? We'd be good to ourselves. We're all hypocrites. We're all aware of my sins and shortcomings are so obvious to me. Thank God he took care of it and I don't have to make them all right, because I'd never get done. Time's too short. I can't get it done. Can't get it done. And man, days without purpose and days without meaning are blah. Jesus, God, can get rid of the blahs. If we take Moses' advice and learn to number our days, learn to attach the significance to our days and see them as God sees them, the blahs will come under control. And life will be full of purpose and meaning again. That all happens only if you accept Jesus. Only if you accept his sacrifice for you. Because you can't make up for these things. You haven't got it in you to make your days longer. You haven't got it in you to get rid of all your shortcomings. You just haven't got it in you. But Jesus does. And we'll offer you his invitation as we stand and sing.